The MMA on the Rocks podcast is intended for adult audiences. If you are not an adult, please do not let your parents know you're listening to this, and don't repeat anything you hear on this show in front of them. Also a reminder that even if you fight recklessly, please drink responsibly. Now that we have all that covered, let's start the show. Welcome to MMA on the Rocks. My name is Bill Welker. You are listening to episode 317 of the podcast, unless you're joining live on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. If you want to catch the show live, please do subscribe on one or all of those platforms. Turn on notifications. Catch the show live. It's more fun that way for all of us. Even though I do appreciate all of you audio-only listeners, which is a vast majority of you. As my mom was right when she told me I have a face made for radio. In any case, I appreciate you guys consuming the show in any fashion whatsoever. And I definitely appreciate all the shares, all the comments, all the feedback, even the criticism. Wow, guys. Amanda Nunes. Usually I lead off with some just boring things that are going on in my life, but we got to get right into this. Did you watch Amanda Nunes dismantle Irene Aldana on Saturday night? Because I'll be totally honest with you, I didn't intend to. I did not plan on watching this main event. I was sitting outside. I was having a cigar, and I was watching the pay-per-view. I got a little adrenaline boost from the Charles Oliveira fight, and I said, it's like 12:30 at night. I just want to go to bed. I had just enough of my cigar left. I said, they were walking out already. And I said, all right, let me just check out the beginning of this fight. I watched the first round. Dominant from Amanda Nunes. Second round, dominant. Piecing her up on the feet. She grabbed that outside single, a snatch and dump. Made it look effortless. Just kind of tossed her to the ground. Didn't even really seem to want to go to the ground with her. Just wanted to throw her around a little bit to make a point. Amanda Nunes kept her foot on the gas for 25 straight minutes. And here's a woman who, earlier in her career, the blueprint to beating her was to just let herself get tired. Like, let her tire herself out. That was the blueprint to beat Amanda Nunes before she made her championship run. I'm sure a lot of you guys remember that. It used to be, you know, the game plan was if you get out of the first round with her, it's pretty much a win. And even her coach, Dean Thomas, at the time kind of admitted that. He said, if you get out of the first round with Amanda, it's kind of, you know, clear sailing from there. She went from that to becoming a two-division champion, winning five-round fights multiple times. And last night, what a performance. Just totally one-sided against a tough contender in Irene Aldana. And credit to her because she had many opportunities to give up in this fight. At the end of the fight, Amanda had a head and arm choke that she was pretty close to. Aldana could have just, you know, let her arm slide up a little closer to her forehead and tap or go to sleep. And she didn't. She kept fighting back. She didn't have a chance of winning that fight. I mean, 50-43 on one judge's scorecards. I can't argue with that. 50-44 was a little more realistic for me. I feel like there was only one true 10-8 round in there. But, I mean, the fight was so dominant. It could have been 50-30. And I'd be okay with it. There was really only one time where Aldana landed a clean shot in the whole 25 minutes. And it got Amanda's attention, but didn't come close to winning or even half of a round. Then we get to the end of this dominant performance of a lifetime. It was an MMA masterclass by Amanda Nunes. She was tooling up Aldana on the feet. She was pressuring. She hit takedowns whenever she wanted to. She was dominant in the grappling exchanges. It's like, what else do you want from a championship performance? Then she lays down both of the gloves, lays down both of the belts, and announces her retirement. She's got a second baby on the way, and she just wants to enjoy time with her family. 35 years old. To me, and this is depending on whether or not she stays retired. To me, this was the greatest retirement in the history of the UFC. And here's why. Only a handful of people have retired as a champion. I think only GSP and Khabib, memory serves. Nobody else has had the opportunity to do that. And GSP didn't do it inside the cage. He did it like a week later after he beat Michael Bisping. He said, yeah, I'm going to step away. You know, I'm going to give up the title. I don't want to hold up the division. Very respectful. Of course, awesome GSP went out on top, but he didn't do it inside the cage. Khabib did retire inside the cage, but, you know, it was disappointing for a lot of people because a lot of people wanted to see him go to the 30-0, and it was very emotional because his father had just passed and his mom kind of asked him to retire. I mean, granted, he beat the hell out of Justin Gaethje, but I don't know how you top this one. You know, Amanda Nunes retiring as a two-division champion. I can't see that ever happening again. You know? And I also don't see the featherweight division existing anymore. My only question is going to be, will the UFC announce it, that the division is done? Or are they just going to kind of like pretend it was never there? I'm guessing it's going to be the latter. I think they're just going to sweep that division under the rug. I was showing you guys last week the rankings. Amanda Nunes was the champ and the only person in the weight class on the UFC's website. So, yeah, I don't think the featherweight division is going to be a thing anymore. I don't think there's anybody in there. In any case, it's never going to happen again where somebody's going to lay down two belts, lay down the gloves. I thought her speech was awesome. You know, telling the story how she came from a little town in Brazil that nobody'd ever heard of, and made her way to becoming a two-division champion in the UFC. Now she can go enjoy all the money she's made with her family, and I think she opened her own gym. So that's going to be awesome for her. There's not a lot of people who get to retire on top. A lot of people stick around too long, you know. Pride is a funny thing. It can get the best of everyone. So in any case, what a fantastic career for Amanda Nunes. You know, if you just look back at the things she accomplished, you know, there was the little speed bump with Juliana Pena, who we'll talk about in a minute as well. But she got her redemption. You know, she dismantled Megan Anderson and submitted her in 2 minutes. She had the fight with Felicia Spencer, who was a really tough contender and went the distance with Amanda. Then there was the win over Jermaine Duranemi, who was probably her toughest opponent in recent memory. And I'll even include Juliana Pena in that one. Just because Amanda struggled in that fight and, you know, couldn't quite compete on the feet and had to try and take the fight to the ground and really grind that one out over Jermaine. Then there was the head kick knockout over Holly Holm. Spectacular. The 51-second knockout of Cyborg, which, you know, that fight was being built up so much, and a lot of people were talking like Cyborg was going to come in there and just kill her. And then Amanda just flatlined her in 50 seconds. That definitely has to be a highlight of her career. TKO Raquel Pennington, easy work. The split decision over Valentina Shevchenko, you guys know, is controversial for me. But it is what it is. It's in the past. It's done. We're not going to change anything. The knockout of Ronda Rousey, pretty much retired Ronda Rousey. And beating Misha Tate for the belt, you know, submitting her in the first round. How many people could say they submitted Misha Tate in the first round? It goes on and on. Yeah, so congratulations to Amanda Nunes. What a fantastic career. 35 years old, retiring the double champ. It doesn't get better than that. So let's talk about a couple of things. Juliana Pena was cage side for this and decided to crown herself queen of the haters because Amanda retires and Juliana is screaming and booing her and telling her not to compare herself to Anderson Silva, even though I guess they have the same amount of title defenses. You know, there are pretty easy ways to become dislikable, and one of them is booing someone during their retirement speech. I don't really get the motivation for that. I don't know if she had too much to drink. I don't know what was going on. She was tweeting like Kanye West in the middle of the night too. So I don't know. I get that she's upset because Amanda just beat the brakes off of her in the last fight and they were supposed to rematch, but she pulled out due to an injury. It seems like Nunes was going to retire after this fight, no matter who she was fighting, which makes the performance that much more impressive because usually when people know they're going to retire, it's more difficult for them to put in the same effort into a training camp. You know, when they know it's the last time they're going to be doing something, it's hard to find that motivation, you know, already 1 foot out the door, so to speak. And the fact that she put on the performance that she did, knowing that it was going to be her last time in there, makes it that much more impressive to me personally. But yeah, and I like Juliana Pena as a fighter. I think she's fun to watch, but you're not going to make any fans with that kind of behavior. You know, kind of trash talking against someone who, like, what do you want her to do? Unretire? This is, I mean, the only time this ever worked was in Rocky III when Clubber Lang called out Rocky and said he wanted to bang his wife. Then Rocky came out of retirement to lose to Clubber Lang and then came back and beat him. If you guys don't remember that gem from the, I guess, late 80s, early 90s. I don't know. When was Rocky III? Somebody look that up for me. Yeah, it was pretty classless on her part. And I get that she was upset and she wants, you know, she wants to settle the score with Amanda, but it's just not going to happen. Like, what are you going to force somebody to fight who doesn't want to fight anymore? Like, what's the end goal there? I don't really know. So, and aside from that, now somebody brought up this stat. With Amanda retired, Juliana Pena does not have a win over anyone on the current UFC roster. I don't know if that's totally accurate, but we could take a look at just her recent fights. If we want, I'll share this with you guys, what I'm looking at here. Don't want that. I don't want that ad for frozen pizza. All right. So let's see. Her last win over someone who was not Amanda Nunes was Sarah McMahon, not in the UFC anymore. She beat Nico Montano, not in the UFC anymore. Kat Zingano, not in the UFC anymore. Jessica I don't believe is in the UFC anymore. Yeah, I think that might be correct. Yeah, she doesn't have a win over anyone on the current roster. So with her behavior, I'd say She's not making a great case for fighting for the vacant title. I would say, you know, let's do a tournament. I'm always a fan of that. You know, find the take the top four girls and have them duke it out. Then you can kind of draw this out a little bit and people will slowly forget that there was ever a featherweight division. Here's where Juliana Pena messed up after the win over Amanda Nunes. She should have called her out at 145 because she would have had the opportunity to be a two division champion. And if she lost, she still would have been the 135 pound champion and would have been guaranteed that third match. You know, even if she had the injury and had to pull out or whatever, she would have still been the champion. So that fight would have had to come together if Amanda wanted that belt back. But that's neither here nor there. All right, guys, I'll tell you a little bit about my weekend. You know, normally I lead with this, but I was so excited about this fight that I didn't even intend to watch. I was going to watch it the next day because it was just so late. And then next thing I know, I'm watching the post-fight interview and I'm going through Twitter and looking at everybody congratulating Amanda Nunes on her retirement. I'm glad I stayed up. I was a little sluggish on Sunday, but yeah, it was nice. It was really nice. It was a much better fight than I anticipated. You know, these things just go too late for me these days. I'm getting old, guys. So I just can't keep pace like I used to. So the weekend was good for me. Spent it at the beach with the family. I know those of you watching on YouTube and Facebook are probably wondering, how did I spend the beach at the weekend? Spend the weekend at the beach and still have the complexion that I have. And the answer to that is hats, rash guards, and SPF 60 or 50, something like that, and reapplying like every 13 minutes or so. Set an alarm on my phone. Like, Siri, let me know every 13 minutes that goes by. It'll put on more sunscreen. The bad part of the weekend was on Friday, we were kind of rushing to get to the beach because I had to drop off my car to get worked on, and it had to be by a certain time. And the wife came home late from work and we were just trying to go. So I was trying to throw everything in the car. Wound up pulling a muscle in my back. Whatever that muscle is in the lower back, like right above the glute, totally pulled it. And I guess that muscle runs right over the sciatic nerve. So I was in crazy pain over the weekend, which is not great when you have to be responsible for a five-year-old and play with them in the pool and the beach and stuff. But I think actually being out in the salt water might have helped loosen it up a little bit. So Saturday, Sunday, I was pretty much useless. Some people might say that I'm pretty much useless most of the time anyway, including the wife. But yeah, I was really like not able to move around easily. Used the Theragun quite a bit. I tried some CBD lotion, ice, heat, all that stuff. Nothing really helping, but feeling a little bit better today. I went into the gym and rolled a little jiu-jitsu today. I just kind of played guard a little bit and just stayed very careful. I don't want to pull anything else, but yeah, that was my weekend. Injured at the beach, but it was a good time. Family had a good time. A bunch of my daughter's friends came out. They were, you know, building sandcastles and riding waves, doing all that fun stuff. Diving to the bottom of the pool. My daughter can swim to the deep end of the pool now, 5 years old. Taught herself how to swim. She can dive to the bottom of the pool and get the little dive toys and stuff like that. So that's cool. Super proud of her. The kid is just so determined. And you know, when she puts her mind to something, she just gets it done. Much like her mother, I'll say. All right, let's take a look at the rest of this card here. Charles Oliveira getting it done against Beneil Dariush, TKO in the first round. I'm disappointed that I can't say I told you so, because I know I didn't explicitly say last week that I thought Charles Oliveira would win. All I said was, and I went back to the episode right after this fight happened to see what I said exactly. I said if Charles Oliveira were an underdog, I would throw money on him. I feel like a lot of people were making a foregone conclusion that Beneil Dariush was going to win. A lot of people were saying, I heard a lot of MMA podcasters and show hosts and analysts saying like, oh, well, Beneil will get a title shot after this, after Charles. And I just don't, I know Beneil is good. I know he's great. And I know he's unorthodox and all the rest. I just don't see how people are looking past Charles Oliveira because of the one loss to Islam Makhachev. You know, the guy had one bad night, and it's like, does that erase the, what was it, 9 or 10 fights he had won in a row before that? Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 fights in a row. And people were saying like, well, Beneil's going to beat him because, you know, he's won 8 in a row or whatever. You forgot about these 11 when he beat the shit out of Justin Gaethje, when he submitted Dustin Poirier, when he knocked out Michael Chandler, when he beat Tony Ferguson, Kevin Lee, Jared Gordon, Nick Lentz, David Tamer, Jim Miller, Christos Giagos, and Clay Guida all in a row. And you guys are like, well, he lost to Makhachev and Beneil's on a 8-fight win streak. So obviously Charles is going to lose. I feel like that was a lot of the breakdowns I was hearing, and I just wasn't seeing it. I don't know if I saw it going down like this, knockout in the first round. I definitely wouldn't have called that. I thought, you know, maybe Charles would have been a little too tricky and won a decision, or, you know, catch a submission somewhere in a transition. But man, what a great fight. You know, Dariush came out, took control right away. Oliveira went for kind of like a hip toss and couldn't get it, but he was too committed to it. So he had to kind of pull Beneil on top of him into his guard. Played around there for a little while, probably a little too long. There's no reason to stay on your back. You know, after like one or two submission attempts, it's time to get back up. And, you know, he stayed down there a little long, but he got up and then just started swinging on Beneil and caught him clean, put him down. And these are two, you know, unorthodox strikers. These are two guys who are similar for the fact that they'll throw wild because they don't care about the fight going to the ground because they're so comfortable with their grappling. It just happens that, you know, Oliveira landed first. It was a great performance. He had a great post-fight speech, you know, talking about Canada, speaking English out of nowhere. You know, I thought that was great. And then, you know, DC told him that Makhachev was tweeting at him, and Charles asked the crowd like who the champion is, and they were all cheering for him. I thought it was fantastic. I thought you did a great job. Let's see. Mark Fellows lets me know that Rocky III was released in 1982. Wow. All right. That was before I was born, but you know, I was raised on those movies. So I would not have guessed 1982. I thought it was a little later than that. That was the one with Hulk Hogan in it too. Hulk Hogan as Thunder Lips, the ultimate male. Hulk Hogan lives pretty nearby. My buddy Matt actually met him the other day. he came into his job. He said he's not getting around so well anymore. The Hulkster, a lot of years of leg drops, not too good on the back. So Hulk Hogan and I both walking around like we've been wrestling for 50 years. Let's see. Thanks for that, Mark. So great performance by Oliveira. I guess there's going to be a rematch with him and Makhachev. Pretty much built in at this point, because Makhachev kind of said, like, remember who the champ is, and Oliveira said, I'm the real champ, so let's do it, I guess, run it back. Mike Malott had two fights on Saturday night. He had a fight to get to the octagon with the banister falling down, all these people trying to high five him, the whole riser collapsed, the whole railing. And he just walked right by like he didn't even notice it. It was like some Final Destination shit. When Mike Malott's walking to the octagon and like 15 rows of people almost fall on him when the banister gives out. And if you look at the clip, he's just looking straight ahead like the Terminator. And all these people are on the ground right behind him. Doesn't even turn back and look. The guy was so focused. He was ready to make Canada proud. He seemed a little tentative in the first round, but once he loosened up, he kind of realized there was a certain point you could tell he realized that he was kind of levels above Adam Fugit. And then he had him hurt bad and then jumped to the arm in guillotine, which he must know that, like, when he latches onto the guillotine, he's got it, because otherwise there's no reason to take the bottom position when you have a guy hurt. But, he knew he had it. It was locked in. Fugit actually tapped while Malott was adjusting his grip. So the thing must have been super tight. Dan Ige looked incredible against Nate Landwehr. Just super composed, very patient, which is exactly the way you need to fight a guy like Landwehr, who's reckless. Landwehr, it was very obvious going into this fight and while the fight was taking place who the more skilled fighter is. Obviously, Dan Ige is more skilled everywhere. But Landwehr had a chance if he could have just made this fight a little dirtier, a little grimier, a little bit more of a brawl. But he was not pulling the trigger, because every time he closed the distance, Dan Ige would switch stances and slap him with a left hook. So, great performance from Dan Ige. He looked incredible. Got a little bit tired in that third round. So I guess two of the judges gave the third round to Landwehr, which I'm fine with. The second round should have definitely been a 10-8 for Ige, because if there was like 15 more seconds in that round, Landwehr would have gotten knocked out. Credit to him, though, for hanging in there, coming back and still fighting in that third round. A lot of people would have given up on the stool because he was hurt bad. Jason Herzog was taking a good look at him at the end of that round. You could tell he was thinking about stopping it. Marc-Andre Barrio, unanimous decision over Eric Anders. I actually kind of thought Eric Anders won this fight. So, but it was so close that, I don't really want to split hairs over it. I thought Eric won the second round and Barrio won the third. The first round I felt was close because Barrio dropped Eric in like the first minute of the round, but then Eric Anders came back and I felt like he controlled more of that first round than Marc-Andre did. Now, obviously the judges disagreed and they're in the position they're in and have the qualifications they have. I don't, and I'm not in that position, but just watching from home, sipping tequila to me, it looked like Eric Anders won that fight. And I don't have a dog in this race. I didn't have money on anybody. I wasn't rooting for anybody. It doesn't make a lick of difference to me who wins this fight. I just saw it like I saw it. I feel like I was pretty unbiased. Either way, I think it comes down to how you scored that first round. I think we can all agree on that. It's just, do you weigh the knockdown over more than, 3.5 minutes of pressure and control time? And I guess the judges weighed the knockdown more. The most unfortunate fight of the evening, Nasruddin Imavov, no contest with Chris Curtis. Imavov was handily winning this fight 3 minutes into the second round. And then there was a clash of heads. Unfortunate for Chris Curtis because he had a head clash in his last fight with Kelvin Gastelum, and that's what he kind of blames for him losing that fight. He was very upset with the referee for not catching it. Felt like he was penalizing Gastelum. He felt like he was really compromised from the headbutt. This time he got a headbutt right next to the eye, opened up a cut. There was blood in his eyes. Supposedly he got 10 stitches next to that eye and possible cornea damage. So that's bad. That's nasty. You gotta feel for the guy. Cause he's in the corner, like trying to wipe the blood out. They're not really allowed to clean it out. All they do is give him a wet towel, and say like, here, good luck, man. It really sucks getting blood in your eyes. Especially you don't have something to wipe it with really, except a towel, like one towel. Like it's really got to be flushed out. There's no way you could just wipe blood out of your eyes and be like, all right, I'm good now. Let's have a fist fight. But unfortunately, he wasn't able to clear his eyes out. And he said several times, I can't see out of it, and then tried to take it back and was begging Jason Herzog not to call the fight off. Technically, Jason could have stopped the fight after he said the first time, I can't see out of my eye. And then he accidentally said, oh, it's blurry. And then the third time he was like, oh, I just can't see. And then he was like, no, wait. And Jason Herzog had to wave it off. He had no choice. You know, the guy can't see out of his eye, can't fight. It's that simple. It's unfortunate for Chris Curtis because of the headbutt incident in the Gastelum fight, but it's probably more unfortunate for Imavov because, you know, he was on his way to cruising to a decision. It took down a guy who previously had 100% takedown defense. He was just tagging Chris Curtis, you know, took him down like fairly easily. It looked like, he would have easily cruised to a decision, if not finding a stoppage somewhere in there. And, he has to get away with no contest. If anything, for Chris Curtis, this may have been a better scenario because he was losing the fight and he gets out of it without a loss on his record. So, I mean, there's that. If you want to look on the bright side of things. All right, just a couple more here. We'll move on. Jasmine Jazuda Vicious, unanimous decision over Miranda Maverick. This was a beatdown. I didn't see this one going this way. I thought if you told me this fight went to the ground and it would be pretty dominant, I would just assume you were saying Miranda Maverick won. But Jazuda Vicious was just a step ahead everywhere. She looked good in the grappling as well. Like she's made a lot of improvements there. Ayman Zahabi, the brother of Firas Zahabi, just blasted Kilenge Ori in the first round with a big knockout in front of the hometown crowd or home country crowd. Fantastic performance by him. He's got to feel good about that one. Kyle Nelson, unanimous decision over Blake Builder. And then let's talk about Steve Ursig. Steve Ursig. This guy made his UFC debut on like 10 days notice against David Dvorak, who is a top 10 flyweight, and beat him by unanimous decision. So you know, young fighters who are always wondering what's the best path to getting to the UFC, the best advice is stay ready. You know, how many times have we heard of guys who have lost on the contender series, but the UFC keeps their phone numbers in the Rolodex, calls them up last minute, and they come in, and if they come in shape, you know, they can pull off a big upset. At this level, anything could happen. So here's this guy who's fighting outside of the UFC. Let's see where he was even fighting. I'm not even sure. I know Mark Fellows is excited about this one because Ursig, the Astro Boy, I don't know what that nickname is about, is from Australia. He was fighting in the EMMA. A lot of finishes on his record, but yeah, seems like a super tough kid. I don't know what the EMMA is, but his last fight there was in February. It was a submission win. He's got a lot of first round finishes actually here too. So comes in on what, 9 or 10 days notice, and gets a win over a top 10 fighter in Dvorak. So that's huge. It's going to be a huge bump for his career. And then Diana Belbita, strawweight match, coming away at the unanimous decision over Maria Oliveira. So the Oliveiras went one for two on this card. I thought it was a good card overall. You know, on paper, I wasn't that excited about it except for the co-main event, and maybe the Dan Ige Landwehr fight. But yeah, except for, you know, the Imavov and Chris Curtis fight, I thought this was a very solid card. I don't expect the pay-per-view numbers will be great. Especially with the price of these pay-per-views, like, oh, damn near $90 now. You're looking at, you know, you buy every pay-per-view, you're spending almost $1,200 for the year. It's crazy. And I know Dana White's thing has always been like, oh, you have some friends over, you order some pizzas, you split everything. It's like, yeah, but, you know, some of us are parents and we watch these things by ourselves and fall asleep before the end of them. So, you know, $90 is kind of a big ask. But hey, I guess they know what they're doing. They're the billion-dollar company, and I'm just the guy talking about them on the internet while I sip some tequila here. This is actually Kirkland Añejo tequila. It's aged, I think, for a year or two. And it's delicious. You get a big bottle of it for like $30, and it's really good. I mean, it's almost Father's Day, so we got to talk about Costco, right? Costco's Kirkland brand, they source their goods so expertly, especially their alcohol. For a while, you know, they had an 18-year-old scotch that was made by Macallan. They have a bottle and bond bourbon that's made by Bardstown, the makers of 1792. They have an Isla scotch that I believe is made by Lagavulin. Just awesome stuff. I think their vodka is made by Grey Goose, I believe. I'm not a vodka guy, so it doesn't make a lick of difference to me. But if you like vodka, then hey. But tequila, 100% agave. I'm sure they source it from a great place. And it's good. You know, I'm just sipping this neat here. Usually don't partake on Mondays, but I'm just, you know, tequila is a natural painkiller. I don't know if you guys were aware of that. And, you know, the back's still feeling a little swollen. So it's just a little medicine before bedtime here. Cheers to all of you. So, yeah, I thought this was a great, great card. And again, I can't stress enough, man. I don't know how anybody ever tops this retirement. you know, retiring with the two belts. Like, forget about the fact that one of those divisions isn't going to exist anymore. You know, she still had that moment. She was still able to lay those two belts down and go out on top. You know, and announce that she's having another kid. Like, how does it get any better than that? With your number one hater booing you right in the front row. So that's awesome. Congratulations to Amanda Nunes. All right, let's take a look ahead to next weekend, which is Father's Day weekend. So shout out to all the dads out there who are doing the right thing. I always have to specify that for Mother's Day and Father's Day, because there's a lot of mothers and fathers out there who aren't doing right by their kids. And, you know, I don't wish happy days to them. I wish happy days to the ones who are taking responsibility for their kids and doing their best to raise them right, you know. And there is no right way to it either. You know, all there is just trying, because as parents, we all mess up all the time, constantly, every day. But even if you mess up 100 times in a day, as long as you wake up the next day, you know, with the same energy and the same effort put towards it, then I think you're doing a great job. So cheers. Cheers to all the dads out there. Hope you all have a great Father's Day. Obviously, I'll be busy with the family on Sunday, so I probably won't do an episode Sunday again. So it's probably going to be Monday again next week. And then I'm going to try and get back to doing this thing on Sunday. I know I've been saying it for a few weeks now, but, you know, sometimes Sunday night rolls around and I'm just shot. I'll be honest with you guys. All right. So great main event next week back at the Apex. These two monsters are getting in that tiny cage at that Apex, Marvin Vettori and Jared Cannonier. This is an awesome fight. I mean, I don't know how this one goes. Let me look. So Jared Cannonier hasn't fought since December. He had that split decision win over Sean Strickland. That was the last fight of 2022. Both of these guys have losses to Robert Whittaker and Adesanya. And they're pretty similar, because those are Jared Cannonier's only losses at middleweight. And I believe those are Marvin Vettori's only losses in the UFC. Is Whittaker and Adesanya. Granted, it was Adesanya twice. Let me double check this for you guys. Okay, he had a loss to Antonio Carlos Jr. as well, but that was back in 2016. Man. So here's the thing. Cannonier has more finishing power, in my opinion. You know, he has the ability to end this fight with one shot. I think everyone would agree he's the bigger power puncher. But Marvin Vettori plays pretty smart. He keeps his defense pretty tight. He gets hit, but the guy has a concrete chin too. You know, if guys like Adesanya couldn't knock him out, it's pretty hard to imagine a 39-year-old Jared Cannonier knocking him out. But if this fight does end in a finish, I would assume it would be Cannonier. For me, the path to victory for Marvin Vettori, he's going to have to put pressure on Jared Cannonier. He's going to have to push him up against the cage, use the clinch a little bit, dirty box. You know, make him kind of stand and grapple a lot and get blood in those arms so that he can't swing them as hard. You know, maybe land a takedown, but Jared Cannonier is tough to take down. Let's see. Yeah, you know, you had. There's been some tough guys. I mean, you know, Derek Brunson couldn't hold him down. And Cannonier wound up knocking him out. And that was just a little over a year ago. Man, these are the kind of main events I like because it really could go either way. I like, by the way, I like this picture on SureDog of Jared Cannonier because he's wearing this like wool gorilla hat. And there's this girl just like standing behind him taking his picture. And his pose is just so picturesque here. It's like, if you just look at his face, it's like, oh, here's this guy like just, you know, being cute for a picture. And then you see the rest of the photo and the physique on this guy where he just looks like a Spartan soldier that they made a statue out of. Yeah, man, I don't know. Their records are pretty similar. Marvin Vettori has more wins, but he's also got more fights. I hate giving picks, man, but I'm leaning towards Marvin Vettori by decision here, I guess. All right, co-main event, Armand Saryukin against Joaquin Silva. I don't know how this fight came together. I don't know if somebody pulled out, but Joaquin Silva is 2-3 in his last five fights. He had been fighting at 145 pounds, I thought. So I'm assuming he took this fight on short notice. So Saryukin is like a minus 1,000 favorite, which is a big favorite. I don't know. What is that? 5-1? Basically, you got to bet $1,000 on Saryukin to win $100. That's the way I understand it anyway, but I'm lost on this stuff. But maybe Silva, you know, moving up in weight, you know, maybe that's the X factor here. So I don't know if you're feeling risky, you know, maybe drop a couple of bucks on Silva because, you know, those are huge odds. He's a huge underdog. And, you know, you never know. He moves up in weight. Maybe he's got some power we haven't seen before. Armin Petrosian against the undefeated Christian Leroy Duncan. Pat Sabatini and Lucas Almeida. That's a pretty fun fight. Miles Johns fighting again. This guy fights every other week too. I feel like this guy's always fighting. Okay, I'm wrong. He hasn't fought since November. I guess, you know, my perception of time is just off. That must be what it is. I feel like I've just seen this guy fight. But no, his last fight was against Vince Morales, November 19th, 2022. All right, Bill, you don't know what you're talking about. Nicholas Dalby and Muslim Salikov. That's a really fun fight. Jimmy Flick, I feel like, is really fun to watch. He had like kind of retired for a little while and then decided he was not retired anymore. He's fighting Alessandro Costa. What else we got on here? Oh, Zalgas Zumagulov. One of my favorite names to say. Fighting Philippe Bunez. Yeah. Oh, and look at this light heavyweight fight. That's the first fight on the card. Zach Paiuga against Modestus Bukauskas. Who decided to make this the first fight of the card? This is an awesome fight. Are you guys kidding me, UFC? What's going on here? I mean, I know Paiuga, He's 35, but that's still like a rookie for heavyweights. He's coming off a win over Jordan Wright and Bukauskas on a 3-fight winning streak. Beat Tyson Pedro, Chuck Campbell, and Lee Chadwick. Why is this fight at the beginning of the card? This fight could be on the main card, in my opinion. Or at least like the top fight of the prelims. What's going on here? All right, this is my sleeper pick because I guess not a lot of people talking about this fight. I'm not going to want to miss this one because these guys are some bangers. There's some big boys who throw some big lever. I don't want to miss them, and I don't want to miss Zalgas Zhumagulov. That's for sure. Fun little card. You know, a lot of these cards where, you know, they don't have the name value, they usually turn out to be like some of the more exciting cards. So I'm excited for it. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I think I can announce this now because it seems to be public knowledge, but Billy Quarantello is going to be fighting Damon Jackson coming up. I'll pull up for you guys when exactly that is, but I love this fight for Billy. I mean, you guys all know that that's my buddy, obviously friend of the show. In Nashville, Tennessee, I don't know when, in August. So let me pull this up for you guys here. There he is. There he is. Look at the smile on Billy Q. Damon Jackson, Billy Quarantello. I like this fight for Billy. You know, he's coming off of that devastating knockout loss to Edson Barboza. You know, credit to him for getting in there with a guy that caliber and doing as well as he did. Damon Jackson, the reason I like this fight as a fan is because I believe they have similar styles. They both grind things out. They're both kind of slow starters. So I think this is going to come down to whoever is able to kind of prime the engine first and get to the other one, because neither one of them is going to get tired. So whoever gets ahead first in this fight is going to have a big advantage. But shout out to my man, Billy Q, you know, making moves, getting in there like pretty soon after that, that fight with Barboza. But I know he's training hard. So, you know, he feels like he's ready. He's going to be ready for August. Then, you know, I'm going to support him in August. I hope you all do as well. And even if you don't, you know, I still appreciate you guys, but root for Billy. He's a good dude. All right, folks. Last thing I want to mention, I have some new content in the works. I filmed a little bit of it. I'm going to work on editing it. I'm going to start bringing my cocktail videos back for you guys. I have some good summer cocktails lined up. I like to keep them simple, no measuring. I just give you the ingredients. We throw it in a glass. We mix it together. That's kind of going to be the theme of these. They're going to be like 1-minute videos. I'm going to post them on my shorts on YouTube, and I'll throw them up on Instagram and wherever else. Just kind of, you know, sharing the drink recipes that I come up with or the drink recipes that I enjoy. And I want to share with you guys. I like making real simple cocktails. You know, I make cocktails for parties when we entertain, or if I go to another party, I'll bring a pitcher of cocktails and serve them to people. And, you know, people always want to know what's in them. So I like making it simple for people, you know, things that taste really good and are creative, have a little bit of a different spin to it, but you know, you could throw it together with stuff you might already have in your bar. So that's where we're going with that. I filmed a little bit of content. I'm just kind of, you know, figuring out how to edit it down. This stuff takes me a little bit longer because I'm not so tech savvy, guys. You know, I'm here to talk to you every week now, but and have a drink with you. But you know, doing the other stuff, I know I slack a little bit. I've been laying low on the social media, although I appreciate everybody who continues to reach out to me there at MMA on the Rocks on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all that stuff. Definitely appreciate every interaction and every private message and all that stuff. And even the trolls, got trolled a little bit today on this show. I was trying not to laugh. I'm not even going to repeat some of the things that were said in the comments here, but I love it all. I really do. So I'm going to try and put more content out for you guys. Try and post some more of the shorts videos because, you know, I know it's hard to remember everything that happens during the show. Some people don't want to watch an hour of the show. You know, some people can only stand me for 15 seconds or 60 seconds, and that's fine. I appreciate you all as well. And if anybody wants to grab some merchandise, reaper1.co is the website. You can grab an over the top, under the influence tank top, t-shirt or hoodie. I don't think we're going to be selling any hoodies anytime soon. It's 90 degrees here in Florida. I don't know about where you all are right now, but use the promo code MMA Rocks 10, save yourself 10% on your whole order. Whether you're buying my merchandise or not, you're welcome to use the promo code anyway. They have some great stuff on there. You can support some local fighters. You can support some professional fighters, some bare knuckle boxers. They all have merchandise on there. It puts money right in their pockets. So go ahead and support those guys. You know, I would hope you would do that over buying my merchandise anyway. And you can still use the promo code. I think that's everything I wanted to talk about. Can't say enough. I appreciate all of you tuning in. Please share the show with your friends. Tell people about it. Watch it with your friends. I don't know. Don't let your kids watch it. It's not, this show's not for kids. But other than that, that's it. So until next time, cheers, everybody. Goodbye.